Blog Talk Radio.
This is Renegade Broadcasting.
Alright, this is General Antiochus here, Dana Antiochus. It is December 11th, 2013, Wednesday, of course, Wotan's Day, and it's another edition of Imperium Europa. I hope everybody can hear me fine. I'm going to check out the chat just to make sure things are going alright. Somebody, just give me a little shout out there in the chat. Make sure it's coming through okay. All right, sounds good. Perfect. Okay, so here we are. I've got a lot of observations for you guys tonight. Some personal thoughts. Nobody really in particular to be interviewed anyway that it has been set up, you know, beforehand. I've been really busy. It's this winter season, work's been kind of killing me, draining the life out of me, but, you know, for the most part, I'm going to try to set some time aside to just reach out to a number of different individuals on this list that I made of great speakers and different people in the movement to get onto the show. And there might be an appearance tonight from a fellow Renegade listener, Heathen Hank, out there. I don't know if he's going to call in or not. He said he might. So if he does, maybe I'll just interview him. You know, I want to keep it, you know, it's like a real democracy here for our own people, trying to get more of the listeners involved, more of the people in the chat room to kind of weigh in on things, because I really do love and cherish everybody that calls in on a regular basis to the show, but we're always trying to get new voices, or just people, you know, those who haven't made their presence known on a vocal level. They might be in the chat, and, you know, I tend to pick out different particular comments made where I find some real insight. And, you know, if I see that I'm agreeing with somebody and it's a real philosophical observation, pretty deep, you know, I make a note of it. A lot of times I just cut and paste what people say, and I keep these records of various conversations I have, whether in the chat room or on Facebook or wherever, and, you know, and then I reach out to those people and try and get them on the show. So it's always great to just have that interaction there. But I'm just looking at my list right now. And, you know, a lot of these people are other hosts on other networks, other shows. Some are, some aren't. But, you know, I think we've done a pretty good job thus far in presenting a wider range of different views, all within the same, you know, mode of thinking, or within, you know, this racialist movement. And, you know, it's always a pleasure just to hear new people, too. So, and I would open it up to anybody who wants to call in as well. But, yeah, Heathen Hank might be appearing. So that's the surprise for tonight. But I can't promise it. So I didn't want to, you know, type anything up and, you know, alert you guys if he wasn't going to be coming on. So we'll see what happens. But for the most part, I've been paying attention to the news. And like I said, I listened to the state-run National Public Radio on my way to work sometimes in the car. And they release some interesting things in relation to Kyle's last interview with Horus the Avenger, who I love. I think he's a truly insightful guy. He made a lot of interesting points about Russia and, you know, different cards that are being played and things of that nature. And, you know, he even commented on Russian RT, Russian TV. And we all know as white nationalists that, you know, they're not, it doesn't appear that they are really on our side. I mean, obviously, I mean, they push the cultural Marxist line when it comes to race, but you know, when it comes to the Jews, it's kind of a different story. And you know, they are pretty hardcore anti-Zionist or anti-Israel. That's readily apparent, and that doesn't, you know, buy that much credibility in our movement, because as we all know at this point, that the issue of Israel is an important one, but it's not the main issue. And you know, it's so much more than just hating on Zion over there. But you know, I do appreciate what they do on RT to tap into a wider audience, and I think it is important and a propaganda tool that we can use. And I have seen even some of our own people on there. I've brought up the fact that I've heard Richard Spencer of the National Policy Institute interviewed on RT, and some other people here and there. Or Keith Preston's been on there, and he's not a white nationalist, but he is a he's in the know. He's an anti-government anarcho-libertarian type guy who I might get on my show at some point. Real interesting fellow. He swims in our circles, you could say. You know, there's a lot of collaboration with countercurrents and that type of stuff. So, but yeah, I only bring it up because I did hear on NPR that you know, there's going to be a new guy who is the head of the state-run media for, you know, RT, and it's some guy that's leaning on our side of the conservative end of the political spectrum, and he's made statements like, you know, homosexuality should be illegal, things like that, and you know, that doesn't really say that much either. I mean, in the same sense that being anti-Zionist doesn't really, you know, hold that much weight. Being against gays doesn't really hold that much weight either for me. I mean, it's all kind of part of the same thing, but, you know, we do know that Russia has kind of tried to at least retaliate or react against, you know, the Jewish influence coming from our end of the geopolitical sphere with, you know, the pushing of various agendas, and that being one of them. You know, just the way that they cracked down on Pussy Riot, that so-called punk band, is kind of another indication there, too. But, yeah, they just made a passing mention of some new guy that is going to be running the network. So I wonder if that's going to give us any chance or opportunity to maybe get some more of our people on there to reach a wider audience potentially. Who knows? We'll see. Time will tell. But yeah, it's just one note there. Then of course we had in the last following days, it was spoken about in the chat. There was another little break in their defenses with some pop culture person, another Kim Kardashian type, I guess you could say, some MySpace, you know, I don't want to say whore. I mean, you know, just one of these MySpace kind of girls that's real popular on there. And then, I mean, you've got these people today in pop culture that really haven't done anything that is deserving or worthy of real praise or admiration or anything like that. They're just kind of famous for being rich or being a partier. You know, they can get around in the Hollywood circles or whatever, you know, and they get famous for just partying. I mean, it's just ridiculous that Americans would actually view this as entertainment. But you know, this is kind of how it is. But anyway, one of these people, you know, and I don't really know much about her, so I don't really want to say anything positive or negative about her. But she came out publicly on her Facebook page with some pretty pro Third Reich, or you could say historical revisionist type thinking about World War II, about the Jews, about you know, what's going on. And it's pretty interesting. I mean, I looked through it. I actually reached out to her. I sent her a message. I left a comment on her page. I haven't really heard anything back yet. But and you know, I don't really expect her to come on the show. But I did invite her on just to see if I mean, things like this should be utilized by us. I really do believe that. I think that we have to kind of start thinking a little more out of the box. And not be so rigid about the judgments of people, or just this moralizing, or just rigidity with, principles. I mean, principles are principles, and you have to hold to them to the best that you can. But, you know, when it comes to getting a message out, this world is really, we're not working with the most ideal situation. That's what a lot of people need to start understanding, is that, if you have lemons, you got to make lemonade. That's kind of really how it goes. And we haven't really been given that great of a hand here. I mean, this is, we're dealing with a deck of cards that, for the most part, are, really, we're really up, we've got quite a struggle ahead. And, you know, it's going to take these little cracks in the system, these little, instances where somebody slips in the Hollywood establishment or whatever. And we should reach out to these people, regardless of, who they are, what they are, whether you consider them to be an upright, noble person or whatever. I mean, it's it all comes down to a numbers game, and how many people we can crank this out to, and not be confined to a very small circle of the same folks, and it's not to say that it's not about creating an elite, because that's what we do want to do, and we see it growing. We there are many hopeful signs, a lot of positive developments. I feel a groundswell personally. I do feel like there is a lot of anger and resentment and hatred towards the modern world and what it's become, and what our lives are like today, and just the direction our country is going in. And when we look at just the state of our race and how just how dangerous it is. I mean, we're really at a point where it's going to be sink or swim. And if we fail, we got to remember extinction is forever. There is no coming back from that. So this is the fight of our lives. This is what it's all about. It's not merely an ego trip or trying to, gain power for our own personal benefit. I mean, this is the most altruistic possible thing that you can do, the most selfless act. Really, you gain nothing out of this. I mean, there really is everything going against you. You have the chance of losing your job, and that's if you go public, not if you're a lone wolf type. But there needs to be people who are kind of shepherding here, that are collecting those out there who are willing to be action oriented people, that are willing to do something and stand up in the here and now, and it's like they say, Thomas Goodrich had a great line. I'm trying to think of what it was. Stand up and be counted, something like that. I mean, this is it, because we're running out of time. It is a multi-generational struggle. Yes, that's true. But, really, I mean, you got to think about it. Our lives are so short. We want to do something with it while we're here. We want to make some kind of an impact or a mark on history. And we're getting that opportunity. Today, this is, we're moving into a period that is, unlike any period before. There are some similarities, there are some, comparisons we can make to, say, the Great Depression. Okay, we're not quite there yet, but, this financial collapse, I believe, is coming. I personally think that the economy will fall before there is some kind of massive ecological or environmental crisis that will propel things into even further chaos. I mean, I really do feel like that's coming well down the pike, but that might take a little while more. I mean, a lot of people talk about running out of oil, post-peak oil crisis, or global warming. I mean, I don't necessarily consider a sham or not a sham. I mean, it does feel like nature is a little out of control now. Whether or not that's due to human influence is debatable. But, just looking at the news, you see typhoons, you see hurricanes, you see a lot of crazy stuff happening, and I don't know, it just feels to me that the Earth is a little pissed off at the human species, and you could blame it on capitalism, blame it on whatever you want, but it is what it is. And the other argument to that is, well, this is kind of what's always been going on, and it's no different today. Who cares? Who knows? I mean, the bottom line is, what can we use for our movement as a catalyst or an opportunity to ultimately take advantage of the coming collapse and disorder and chaos that will follow the result of the system imploding upon itself. So, and actually related to that, I did post in the chat not too long ago. I came upon an article here. It was pretty interesting. It's on SOTT.net. I guess that means Signs of the Times. .net, and the article is called "Impending Collapse of Civilization is Mathematical Certainty," says University of Connecticut professor. I'm not going to read the article, but the bottom line is the guy isn't really telling us anything we don't know. He's looking at different cycles throughout history, the Roman Empire, rise and collapse of communism, and he basically says that America's superiority is next, and unless something drastic happens to avert it, there's going to be something major going down here. You know, whether it is the rising gap between the rich and the poor, that would be a Marxist interpretation, the incoming inequality gap. But as we all well know, while that is a factor, class is always a factor. Race is the other huge factor here that nobody really talks about, except for on sites like RenegadeBroadcasting.com. And it's readily apparent that we're moving towards a time of real uncertainty and change. But really, the difference between a conservative and a revolutionary is understanding that this is happening, and whether or not you embrace it and look at it as a means of completely just putting the final blow towards this system, which is at war with us, at war with our race, our culture, everything that we are is dependent upon this whole thing coming down at this point. So, a conservative kind of laments this idea, is wants to preserve it, wants to look back towards the past and think about how we can return to this golden era, whatever it was, the 50s, the 20s, the 1800s, and we need to realize that's over. I mean, this is we're in a new age now, and what we do right now is going to affect the next 20 years, and we may be at the point where we're only, as a movement, going, we're in its, we're in the infancy. We're in like a germinating stage, an embryo. And, this is like for the youth and for the older people who have kind of been doing this for decades already, we all do need to come together, and we need to start thinking hard and acting hard. I mean, like, in our actions, I always say that cooler heads should prevail in most cases, but we also need that energy, momentum, and enthusiasm that you get from the hard heads too, and the people that are just ready to get out there and show their faces. So, but yeah, this particular article, I guess the professor is named Turchin, Turchin, and he came up with some kind of mathematical formula, basically saying that violence is coming down the pike. And, violence is here right now. It's already here. I mean, it's not really telling us something we don't already know. And when they say, there's two great divisions, economic and social, hidden in the subtext of the word social is race. You know, whether they want to admit that or not is it doesn't really matter. I heard also that there is a new book out, another one of these race denial books trying to refute the idea of race itself, and you know, the contradiction in that is so apparent that even the interviewer on NPR even brought it up and said, well, I mean, if you can't use the word race, what are you going to call it? I mean, what's our point of reference here? I mean, obviously there are differences between people, and you know, she just kind of wiggled her way around that question, and she was like one of these probably self-hating white Marxist liberal feminist types in the universities. I mean, really, this new elite, this professorship of these people are just disgusting. I mean, the way that they are so turned inside out, I mean, it truly is Invasion of the Body Snatchers. That is what this really, I mean, that movie, if you haven't seen that movie, I recommend to go out and see it, because that's what this comes down to, and that's what they've done to half of our people out there. They've literally turned them inside out. They've taken their minds, and you know, these people are just zombies. I mean, they're total sheep, total drones, can't think for themselves, and they are not worth anything to us. I mean, so we're not out there to save these people. We're trying to save ourselves, and that's what all our actions and our effort and our energy is dedicated towards. Because once you hear other people who think the same way, you get emboldened. You start to realize that you're not alone, and when you start to make these connections in person, and that's what the roadshow was all about, it really does kind of light a match under you. You know, it reminds you what you're fighting for. So, I mean, I'm the more the better, as far as I'm concerned, for street action and creating just a presence out there. And you know, we have to be smart, but I think Renegade is doing something different. We're following a more revolutionary, more well thought out dynamic here, and we're willing to analyze you know, the positives and negatives and the cost benefit analysis of what the outcome of a certain particular action might be. And thus far, I mean, things have been going pretty well. So I guess I'm just kind of building up to the idea of the White Man March. And I did not come up with this. This really was kind of sprung up. You know, I don't know where. I'm guessing Kyle was the man who had the vision. You know, I mean, really, I really do believe in you know, my fellow hosts here. I think everybody is pretty intelligent, and you know, now that we've kind of convened in the flesh, you know, we have this confidence between ourselves, and we know that we have the audience out there, and we have the people. It's just a matter of inspiring them and getting them to want to come out to something. So, you know, as far as the White Man March goes, you know, I'm 100% behind it, and I'm going to definitely try to, I will be there. I know I will be there. We've got a lot of time to prepare for this kind of thing and make sure that it's a success. I personally know that I could, you know, at least a good number of folks on my end of things. So we're going to do that. And each one of us, you know, everybody just tells 5-10 people, and then all of a sudden you've got more than enough. Even if it's only 100 people, you know, that would be plenty to make a real statement, and then to get it on tape. And then once you get it on tape, then you upload it onto the internet, and it takes on a life of its own. It becomes perfect propaganda. It's a way to kind of really scare the enemy and show them that, you know, this is, despite the fact of all their control, all their censorship, all of the mechanisms they have in place to shut us out and keep us quiet and suppress any reaction against this this supremacy, this complete Jewish domination of our lives. I mean, this is not going to stand, and they can't control the internet, and that is our weapon. They can't control open source communication. This is kind of guerrilla tactics here that need to be employed, and really, it's all it is a matter of just sparking a flame in the consciousness of the Volk, where it can build up to a point where we don't have to have, people like Kyle just spending 10 hours a day organizing and creating websites and doing, if more people start reciprocating and replicating what we're doing right here, that would be more than enough. But you got to show that you're really, you're not just an observer. You can't just be somebody sitting on the sidelines and, just kind of pay attention to what's going on, what other people are doing, but not really do anything yourself. It's not going to work if everybody doesn't jump in at the same time collectively. And, all we're really talking about is spreading a message at this point. Nothing more, nothing illegal, nothing incriminating. And, that's why we have to at least, at the very least, try, because we're going to feel very bad if we don't do something. And then we can already see where the world is headed, where it's going, what is being bequeathed to our children, the future of the race. And it's not a pretty picture. It's a pretty dark picture, in more ways than one, I mean, literally and metaphorically. So, I guess that's really how I feel, and I've personally been to a number of different events in the past. I've been to a couple Matt Hale rallies, as I said, in Connecticut. I've been to the Billy Roper rally in Massachusetts when we were protesting the Holocaust Memorial there. I met up with a group called Northeast White Tide when they had they had some public event in Boston as well. So, I've been around to different things, that's just kind of the most eventful ones where, and maybe someday, I guess I'll shoot Kyle some pictures of all these events, because I got some really great pics of these things. But, in my experience, really, there's nothing to fear, because even worst case scenario where you are outnumbered, the cops do end up showing up at these things. I mean, it's almost impossible not for them not to be there. But the difference here is that this type of thing, as the last roundtable, I recommend everybody going back and listening. If anyone hasn't heard it already, the last roundtable kind of fleshes out some of these thoughts and ideas about kind of what we're thinking, the general approach we plan to have, and there are a lot of surprises at this point. I mean, it's not going to be just your run-of-the-mill typical NSM rally or whatever's been done before, I mean, I'm just here to say that really, there's nothing to be afraid of. I mean, there's always a risk, there's always the potential for conflict between antis that catch wind, or Antifas, ARA types, One People's Project, all these ridiculous subhumans. But, the bottom line is you got to have a little faith. You got to have a little confidence in your own people. And, it's a lot of these folks that oppose us are pretty pathetic when you look at them physically, and there's a good chance that there won't even be any of them with how, in the way that we plan to do it. There's a good chance it'll just be us, none of them, no cops. But what I'm saying is, even if they are there, and it's us and them, you know, I say let the heads roll. I mean, when if it comes to it and you have to defend yourself, you defend yourself. But in most cases, they're really a bunch of punks. They're not going to really do anything unless they have overwhelming numbers. And you know, it's and when the police are there, you know, it's it makes the situation. I mean, the one thing that I do worry about is I remember, I think Severus Sniffles said it was a really good point that he made, and I called into Bill's show when he interviewed Tom Metzger about this, and the point he made was that when there's too few of us and too many of them, and the police end up being our protectors, it does look really bad, because you know, it presents the image that the state is on our side, that they are this is corporate fascism protecting the fascists, you know, when in reality, you know, they are the state. I mean, they are the product of state-run education, propaganda, the media, the culture. I mean, we are the antithesis of all of that. We are the defiance towards this whole society, culture, everything that has become of this piece of crap that those call a nation. I mean, this is no longer a country. It really is not a nation, and it's not your nation. And that's what you need to realize. You need to get pissed off, you need to get angry, and you need to start fighting. So that's what the march is all about for me personally, and I just wanted to speak a little bit about it to kind of calm some fears, maybe, or to motivate people to get involved, you know, to make calls to your friends. You know, I mean, we got a lot of time to do this thing. There's a few months, so we want to make sure that we do come out in force, and we have plenty of great propaganda. And, you know, we get it all on tape, and, you know, we can prove that something can be done that has some kind of force behind it, and is not just some, you know, just the laughing stock for the enemy to mock us with and ridicule. But, you know, and even if we fail, you know, I mean, it still is a victory in the sense that somebody is trying, you know. In the end, you know, it may all be a sinking ship, but that doesn't mean that we ever have the right to give up or, you know, not stand by our post. I mean, this is really our duty now. We have no choice. There's no turning back. Once you're in this for any number of years, or you really feel the spirit behind it, you can't ever really, it's not something you just do as a hobby. You're here for life, and you're waiting for things to happen, and then you realize that nothing's going to happen until you make it happen, you know. So that's why I support the idea, and you know, I'm just glad that I found like-minded people that have the same kind of energy and enthusiasm and will to affect change in the world. So that's about it for that. And let's see what else we've got to say here. I guess I clicked out of the studio, but I'll bring that back up now. I'm hoping that people could hear me that entire time. Can anyone in the chat let me know if I went off there for a second, because I accidentally clicked the link for the Block Talk Studio. But I have some other comments and observations on some other things. I've got something to read as well. If anybody does want to call in, you're free to do so. Let me see here. Oh, great, I'm still on. They never lost me. Kick ass. Okay, now I'm just going to try and pull up the studio here. Because if somebody calls, I can't even see who's on the line. But yeah, I mean, another thing is just contemplating what led to our story state of fears in the first place. You know, we talk a lot, we hear a lot about just the food being poisoned, the water, you know, I mean, you have biological things and psychological things going on at the same time, pretty much. It's hard to tell sometimes exactly what has put us in this docile, weak, submissive position as a white race. But, you know, I tend to think it is a combination of the two, but it's really more psychological than anything that you're, any fluoride you're drinking in the water or any thing you're eating. You know, the food is not good, it's not healthy. I mean, that's pretty obvious. But I really do believe it's the conditioning process, the brainwashing, the incremental, slow, you know, invasion of the body snatchers, just turning us inside out as a race, inverting our values, the attack on the family structure. You know, it's all been really a very cleverly planned program to, you know, just demoralize us and get us not to want to have children, you know, through economic oppression, the fact that the money is being taken through taxes from us that goes to other races. You know, that's pretty obvious even to conservatives. That's the thing they always talk about. You know, you can bring up welfare to a conservative. It's not really all that hard. You can bring up immigration to a conservative, but you know, you start talking about the people engineering this thing, designing it, the Jewish problem, you start talking about deeper issues. I mean, conservatives can only really go so far. They know about communism, but you know, they don't really, they hate National Socialism, they believe in this libertarian individual bullshit that's pumped out by the think tanks. And you know, I just I saw this show on TV called, you know, good or, it was about people being good or evil, okay? And this relates to Phil's last show, actually, about, you know, they got into some different topics like karma and you know, whether or not it's all about love or all about hate or, you know, kind of really abstract things. But I watched this show about trying to scientifically define good or evil or see if there are any indications at an early age in children through psychological tests whether a child is prone towards what you can consider amoral or moral behavior. And one of the tests that they did was they set up a you know, two different Muppets or puppets or something, and one of them you know, stole from the other toy and never gave it back, something like that, and the other one shared or something. I don't know what it was, but you know, they presented these two different scenarios, and and they would bring, they would let the child decide which one, they'd let the child pick, you know, which one they liked more. And apparently 70% of the time, the children would choose the object or toy or Muppet, puppet, whatever the thing was that shared or that gave back the, you know, what was not his, you know. And but 30% of the time, or, you know, every once in a while, a child would pick the evil guy, you know, the bad guy. Now, when you think about Darwinism, social Darwinism, this kind of relates as well, because, you know, it is a war of survival. You know, it's survival on an individual level in life and on a collective racial level. And what's been done to us with Jewish capitalism is that they've kind of created this separation between the individual and the race. They've convinced us that we're not part of a larger group. Somehow our DNA and our genes are just isolated in a vacuum. You know, there is no past, there is no future. You have no ancestors, you have no line of future descendants lineage. I mean, it's like it's insane. I mean, it really comes down to materialism and just the idea that you live for today. It's all about obtaining the most amount of wealth and material success that you can in this life. And it's very non-spiritual, or and a lot of the Christians will bring this up and say, well, that's because they destroyed Christianity. I really feel like spirituality is important. That's why we talk about it on Renegade. I remember on Bill's show, the fellow who I never really interacted with before that, man, that guy was great. I really enjoyed him. The point I'm making here is that I agree with both of those views that, on the one hand, we have a very intense uphill battle to be fought, where these kind of abstract lovey-dovey notions of, very out there thinking, whether it be, because when you get into, when you get into very philosophical, metaphysical things, it tends to really get, very deep. And, this is why I find that traditionalists, I consider traditionalists an ally. They're a group of people who, are just against the modern world. A lot of them are very far right in their political persuasion. Many of them have read Julius Evola and Revolt Against the Modern World and this kind of thing. But what I've noticed with them is that they get lost in these arguments and debates over tradition and culture and soul and spirit and all this. And that's where I do agree with the other folks that, look, we have a biological survival problem here that needs to be met first before we really worry about all these other things, different planes of existence and reincarnation. All these other things can come later when we have the luxury to sit around and truly think about them. Whereas right now we kind of really need to just organize, network, and start doing things that are going to improve our chances of winning this war. So I sympathize with that view. But on the other hand, we're not going to win the war ultimately if we don't provide the motivation, the spark, the reason, the very causes belly or entire you've got to give people a reason to fight, and it can't just be about saving the white race. I mean, I love the race, but I love all our accomplishments, everything that we are. I mean, that's really what defines being an ethno or white nationalist. But when you look at the state of decay in the present position the race has gotten itself in, the way so many of our people are completely lost and gone to us, there has to be some kind of spiritual component to any political revolution. This is why National Socialism was so powerful, because it had so much more behind it than just kind of economics and how they're going to fix the unemployment crisis or whatnot. It brought together so many different angles. And a caller just dropped. I hope that wasn't Heathen Hank, because he did say he was going to call, and I did want to do an interview with him, but If that was you, Eden, call back in. I'm getting to the point here. I just wanted to finish this really quick thing with this show about good and evil. There was some genetics discussed, and not just genetics, but chemicals and neurochemistry, and they were talking about testosterone and genes for aggression. They brought up a warrior gene, I guess, called MAOA. The selfish gene. There's a book behind that as well, and how it relates to Darwinism and this kind of theory. These are all very important issues to, say, an evolutionary psychologist or biologist. Someone like Kevin MacDonald he would do justice to this much more than I can. But they were also discussing the nature-nurture thing with, if you have bad genes, quote-unquote, with a good environment, the good environment might cancel out the bad genes. And by bad, they were testing for evil, and they were defining evil as amoral, which really doesn't tell you anything. I mean, but for sake of argument, I guess just people who don't see a problem with stealing or doing whatever it takes to get ahead, the Machiavellian type of mentality, this kind of thing. Even Nietzschean, you could say, in a sense. But, they said if you have good genes, quote-unquote, with a bad environment, that could cancel each other out, too, and you can go either way. And this is obvious to most people. But other than testosterone and aggression, the other thing was oxytocin. And I've heard that proposed as the chemical that makes us feel like we're in love. It's a chemical related to the bonding experience and empathy and altruism. I'm beginning to wonder if just the white race is suffering from, a lack of testosterone. And just these genes for aggression, and because when you look at the effeminization of our race, and just the willingness to submit and be docile and weak and not stand up, I mean, I don't know how they would have done that, though. I mean, that's where it gets weird. Is like, is it just through the food, through what they're, but. We're all eating the same food out there, so maybe really for me, the only conclusion I can come up with is just that our race is on a cycle. It's on an arc, and we're on the descending part of the arc. We're in a death cycle right now. We are this is where the concept of a race soul and the spiritual thing comes together, because it just could be that we're fighting against a period of destruction for our own people, or a passing from one civilization to the next. The West may just be in its climax. I mean, many people have written about this in the past, like Oswald Spengler, who wrote Decline of the West. The writing is on the wall. We're not having children. We're not we've lost touch with our soul, with our roots, with our everything that is organic and natural. And this artificial society that's been created in large part by our enemies, we can blame them, but we've accepted this situation. We have allowed this to occur. So, it's like they say, it takes two to tango. You can't just blame everything on them. There's a lot of culpability on our own shoulders, and that's where the genocide versus the suicide argument comes into play. But, as far as nature-nurture and genes and biodeterminism, what was funny to me is just that they're discussing all these things on a mainstream channel like the History Channel. And I'm saying to myself, what's hilarious is that this is what the National Socialists were talking about. I mean, when they talked about genes for crime, or weeding out criminal behavior through eugenics or something like this is exactly what they were talking about. And this is kind of the direction they were hinting at on the show. And, you know, nature and Darwinism, I mean, in a social Darwinist model, the predators always rise to the top just by the very nature of the fact that, you know, they're tougher. They're willing to kill to survive. And, you know, the weak get destroyed. They get eaten. You know, and, you know, we've really become, you know, you know, we recognize that we have a predator. At least we know that there is a virus inside of us, or there is a predatory group that is operating, and we are not conscious of it. Once we spread this message far and wide, once this catches on, and I believe it is, I see signs every day. I don't really think they could even stop it at this point. But once we become conscious, not only of who is destroying us, and you know, at the same time we become conscious of ourselves, we become racially conscious, or as my buddy who runs Mind Weapons in Ragnarok says, once white people become self-aware, to use a term in artificial intelligence, like the Terminator, you know, that's exactly what it's going to be. It's going to be the Terminator. And I believe this is going to happen. A lot of people don't. You know, many people are cynical and kind of they think that white nationalism is a joke. But I do feel sincerely something is going on here that is real and that cannot be denied. And, you know, they really quickly, just to continue with this, they also did brain scans. And they were trying to show that serial killers apparently had some brain damage in their temporal lobe or the amygdala, where they have where you have emotion. And, you know, there was also a connection to the area where our primitive drives are. And they made an analogy with a sports game where, you know, they took the blood of the people in the different team, and they tested it before they practiced, before, you know, practicing before a game, and they tested it the blood before the practice and after the practice, and you know, apparently, I guess a sports game was a good metaphor because you know, there's a form of altruism in creating a team together to get them to work in conjunction and, you know, just almost spontaneously to be on the same wavelength, the same vibration. It's almost a telepathic thing, just the way, I mean, and if you look at nature and you look at bees or you look at ants, you know, I mean, it's mind-blowing how they really do have this primordial essence flowing through them where they become this one organism despite the fact that they're all these separate little ones. And, you know, Arthur Schopenhauer talked a lot about this in his writings where he discussed the concept of the will in nature. And Nietzsche built on this a lot where he took his philosophy. But, you know, in the game, the teammates have to kind of all, you know, meld together and become one organism, and that's racially what we need to do. And they have this bonding experience of just practice. And you know, when they tested the blood, they saw these markers for altruism, or the chemical that is related to that, I guess oxytocin, at rising levels. But at the same time, they also saw a rise in testosterone, which is kind of the antithesis of that, or the, you know, other side, where, you know, that comes into play because obviously you're getting pumped up. You want to score a goal. You want to win. And testosterone, I guess, is connected to selfishness and individualism, or but it doesn't have to be. But I mean, in this occasion, I guess they were making that point. There is an article here I wanted to bring up that kind of ties into this. Let me find it for you guys. Let's see here. Thought I had a way to get. I have like a million book links, or bookmarks rather, for different websites that I find. And I thought there was a way to click a button and go right to the end of the long list of links, but I guess I'm not. It's not working right now. But I'm gonna find this. This site or this particular article that relates exactly to what I'm talking about, and I want to read that because it goes so well with what we were just discussing right now. So just give me a second, guys, and we'll pull this up here. Got a few different callers on the line. Okay, here we go. I'm going to find it right now. Mental illness, a Jewish disease. Oh, that's a good one, but that's not the one I'm looking for. This is the one I'm looking for, and I'll read that for you guys now. All right, this is coming from topconservativenews.com, and it says, Science Daily, whites have lowest instance of MAOA-L gene. Oh, and that's what I mentioned before. Yeah, the MAOA, the warrior gene, I guess it's being called, which is linked to aggression, violence, crime, and sexual abuse. Apparently, American black males are twice as likely than American white males to have MAOA-L, which has been linked to crime, violence, and aggression in scores of studies going back for 15 years. Black males are also 13.5 times more likely to have a rare version of the gene associated with extreme violence and extreme aggression. Latinos and American Indians are also nearly twice as likely as whites to have the common version of the gene. However, they are only about one-fourth as likely to have the extreme version compared to blacks. So I guess there are different variants of this gene or strains of it. New scientific techniques have brought to light exactly how the so-called warrior gene works. New studies using MRIs show how brain activity in those who have the gene differs from those without it. Studies have linked the gene to increased levels of sexual violence, alcoholism, crime, and even higher levels of credit card debt. That's kind of funny. However, very little is said about it outside scientific journals. The reason is obvious. Many articles published on the gene even state that it has serious implications concerning race and ethnicities, which they don't even admit exists, which is totally politicized, and all real physical anthropologists and biologists know it is a reality. So this is another fissure or crack in the system, because their own scientists are at odds over this kind of debate. I remember PBS had a huge debate over the concept of race. Which you can find on their website, and they brought in different people, some forensic anthropologists and those who study bone structure and things of the like. But I'll go on. Whites, usually referred to in euphemisms like Westerners, are said to be less likely to have the gene than other groups. One-third of whites have MAOA-L, while groups usually only identified as others have instances of two-thirds or higher. It has also been suggested in scientific journals that whites may be less affected by the gene than others. In fact, researchers have censored their own findings on race and this particular gene. Others have faced hostility from the university community for mentioning which races have the highest rates. I guess it stands for metabolizing enzyme monoamine oxidase A, and it's spoken in euphemisms when it comes to ethnicity. What this article here, and this comes from Council of Conservative Citizens, and they're a semi-racialist, explicitly racialist website. I consider them good people. You know, I don't know how outspoken they are on the Jewish problem, but I would guess that they're with us there as well. But what's interesting here is just that, you know, it's being presented as, you know, this is something that makes us better as a race because we don't have this warrior, you know, this aggressive impulse here. And I'm arguing here for the opposite idea. I'm saying that, no, this is exactly what we need. We need an infusion of this type of gene. Now, I don't want us to interracially mix to get it, but we have to find it somewhere. And we know it exists because, well, just look at the past. Look at our history. Look at the Vikings, the Roman Empire, the Greeks. I mean, you just go anywhere you want prior to this century. So another thing that relates to this too is this study of epigenetics is another thing where you know, scientists are now putting together the idea of how behavior affects, you know, your own behavior, which results from your own mind and your own influences and thoughts and just how you're raised, the mentality you have or your parents have, how that affects your genes and your biology. So there's an interrelationship here between nature and nurture, as we've always known, but at a deeper level. And in philosophy, they've always talked about the mind-body connection, and that's another thing that kind of ties in here. You know, just the way, you know, people have mentioned the placebo effect in psychology, the way that you can kind of, through the very act of believing something, affect change in your own body. And, you know, we know when you get stressed out, you know, you have higher levels of anxiety. There are negative consequences physiologically in your system. You know, and in a metaphysical level, you know, and people in, like, New Age stuff kind of know this too, and they speak of it in terms of auras or chakras or prime meridians or acupuncture. I mean, what, you know, there's all these different interrelated subjects and topics, but I just wanted to bring that up as food for thought, just for the sake of it. I mean, we you know, like we say, a renegade. I mean, the white warrior is the last hope for the race, the Aryan warrior. You know, somebody, and in order to become a warrior, you can't fear death. And that's where spirituality part of it comes into play. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a spirituality where, you know, you believe that when you die you're going somewhere else, or your consciousness lives on, or whatever. Church of the Creator people have found solace in just the blood itself, and just the continuation and existence of our people. I mean, and that's fine. I mean, whatever inspires you to die and to fight and die and kill too. I mean, it's I like when J.B. Campbell said, you know, it can't just be about, we always tend to say, you know, you got to be willing to die for this. Well, it's not just die. You got to be willing to kill too. I mean, it's all, it really is, a web here, a karmic kind of web of relationships, because at some point, we all know, I mean, we're on defensive. We're at a point where we're being pushed into corners here. You know, white flight is, you know, not going to be the ultimate solution to our problems. You know, there has to be a final stand at some point. And, you know, it's just a matter of awakening that spirit and spreading. You know, because once it spreads, once this thing goes viral within the consciousness of our own folk, I mean, it's there's no stopping what we can do. So that's why I still kind of cling on to these hopes. Maybe it's foolish, who knows? Maybe the enemy has it in the bag, but, you know, I just think it's right around the corner where, like I said before, you know, we become self-aware and go Terminator. So I'm going to just play a song, a quick quick song just to take a break and clear my throat. I know I had a couple people on the line. Maybe one of them is in Hank, I don't know, but we've got another hour here on the live stream, and then we'll go into the overtime depending on you know, how the conversations go. So I'm going to pick up my callers after a very short break. So we've got a 206 number, a 608 number, and I think that's Jim. All three of these numbers look familiar. I don't know if he even is on there or not, but we'll get to the callers next. I'm just going to, like I said, play a track, and then we'll be back. So let's see what we got here. Okay. Yeah, this is a French band. I'm gonna play. Oh, actually, before I play that, I wanted to play this. I find it to be kind of humorous, and it relates to some of the topics we discuss here. So here we go, and we'll be back shortly. So to the call that dropped, you can call in after the song, and I'm gonna pull everybody up. So anybody else who wants to chat and maybe comment on what I've discussed here tonight, feel free. The number is 347-633-9657. That is 347-633-9657. This is Imperium Europa with your host, Dan Antiochus, the General. And it is Wednesday, December 11th, 2013, Wotan's Day.
Bob, did you know that in the early 1800s, it was illegal for white people to enslave African Americans?
Hmm.
But then Abraham Lincoln, a white man, set them free.
Yeah. And David and I believe that it's never too late for us to say to our African American brothers and sisters,
you're welcome. Hey, you're welcome. Hey, don't mention it. Use that freedom in any way you like, because you're not slaves. No more, don't have to behave. No more, but we sure hope you do. You're welcome to Yooby Dooby 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 Doo.
All right, that was from a show called Mr. Show. I tried to play a little bit to Mike, but he wouldn't have any of it. I mean, it's one of those guys is a Jew, David Cross, his name is. And it's like a leftist counterculture, you know, sketch comedy series. It used to be on HBO, but they have their moments in there. And there is a lot of really interesting revelations. They have one sketch where they reveal a Jewish alien. You know, is, you know, trying to mix all the human races into one. I mean, if that's not telling you exactly, you know, it's almost like they're just, blaringly obvious in the way that they're, you know, releasing this out, in a very subtle way, or not so subtle way, actually. I mean, South Park had something similar where they had an episode about, Jewish aliens running a reality show called Planet Earth. I mean, it's just like, you know, they do this through pop culture, and, you know, these things are huge if you just pick up on them. That's why we kind of have to replay them, even if you hate the show or you hate the message. I mean, it completely demonstrates what we're talking about here. You know, they have sketches on, well, there's one, probably play a few other ones that are pretty decent or humorous, but, you know, I don't consider them to be allies or anything like that. I mean, don't jump to conclusions here, you know. I'm just saying, on a lighthearted note, it's sometimes funny to see what is out there in the underground or not-so-underground, just floating around in, you know, Hollywood Jew land there, but yeah, so let me see, there's yeah, I'm gonna play let's see, this is a band called Tidfall, and they're a Norwegian band. They've got members from the band called Emperor. I really like them, and we'll be back soon in 4 minutes or so. Actually, the band I opened with was Mastodon, if anybody was wondering. A song is called Blood and Thunder, and that album is Leviathan. It's called Leviathan, and it's about Moby Dick, the famous book, and great white writer, just great heroes in there, the Promethean spirit, just a sense of adventure going out there and capturing a whale. I mean, it's, this is the, what our people used to be, and this is what we have to become again. Not that I'm, not that I'm for killing whales. I mean, I love nature. I love animals. I'm just saying, I mean, the fearless spirit, that is what we need. There's a line in a Homeric epic where he says, go on with a spirit that fears nothing. That is the only way we are going to be able to conquer our enemies. That is why we will be participating in the White Man March. So, this is Future Doom by Tidfall, and we'll be back real soon. I'll pick up all the callers. If you guys can't handle the metal, you can just pull off and call back in a couple minutes, and we'll be back. We've got about 40 minutes left of the live stream, and I'll see you soon. All right, we are back, guys. This is the General here with you. That was Tidfall with Future Doom, and that is what we're facing if we do not fight back. So, yeah, guys, if anyone wants to call in, I see Jim, I see the 608 number. I'm going to pull them up soon. But before I do, really quickly again, it's not going to be a long rant. I'm just going to say quickly, I did go to a show last Saturday, and that's why I wasn't at the round table. I was at the same venue, actually, the week before that as well. So, you know, I told Kyle I will definitely cover the next at least few round tables or a couple round tables. You can expect that. But, you know, one interesting thing happened at the show. It was metal bands and a punk slash thrash band, you could say. The singer, kind of went on a little rant, a little tangent about Nelson Mandela. And he was, it was just funny because it's not what I would have expected. Well, I mean, it was something that I guess I would expect, but... You know how there's a lot of kind of leftist poison and pollution in the minds of some metalheads out there, the racialist ones. But, you know, this guy just kind of let loose and he was like, you know what? I'm happy Nelson Mandela's dead. He was like, fuck Nelson Mandela. I don't care. I don't give a shit that he said that on the microphone. And it was pretty cool. I mean, just to hear that. Come out of a singer, you know, it's kind of like I'm sure if I talked to the guy, he wasn't like a closet white nationalist or anything like that, but it does prove that there is this kind of sentiment that is bubbling under the surface subconsciously in a lot of our people, especially in the right scenes, and that's kind of why I play a lot of metal, because I want to create that relationship, that attachment to these ideas with a musical genre. I think it's very important because not only that it already exists, not only that it's already there and apparent to those of us who are part of that, but just to further reinforce that idea as a means of projecting our image, our message into a stream of people that you can find. So I'm gonna go ahead and pull up the callers. This is the 608 number. I'm gonna go to them first. 608, are you just listening, or did you wanna comment at all?
Hey, Dana. Hey, it's James.
Oh, hey, what's going on, James?
Oh, same old. You know, apparently the age of the angry white male is over. This is hot off the press. I heard it on National Purim Radio. The author's going to be on tomorrow for a full interview. But apparently the desegregation of the world has led to the demise of the angry white male.
Oh, so I guess it's all over then. There's no point in fighting anymore, and we're just all embrace each other, and it's going to be one big happy family now from this point on. That's good to hear, man.
Well, yeah, this is a promo I heard today on the radio.
Oh, this is a real thing. This isn't you just kind of like joking around. You actually heard this, like?
Yeah, no, it's a local program on the public radio here. And they're going to interview an author. I didn't catch his name, but that was the tagline, is desegregation has led to the demise of the age of the angry white male. And the full story at 4 tomorrow. And at that point, after I heard that, I just, you know, I said, well, it's undeniable at this point. Like, to make any racial arguments of racial issues and supporting one's own race to anybody, and for anybody to not have this on their mind it's unbelievable at this point, because it's in your face. Like, there's no denying what's happening.
Exactly, man. I hope you keep tab on that, man. You know, just keep a lookout for it. If anybody else sees it, bring it up. I mean, I don't know the name of that new book that came out on trying to deconstruct the concept of race. I'm sure I'll have that for you guys at a later date. But, you know, any of the listeners out there who, in your daily lives, if you hear public service announcements or you hear some propaganda from the enemy, it's great to call in and just bring this kind of thing up, because it just provides further evidence of their desperate attempts now. I mean, to me, this is a desperate attempt because they just can't they're gonna keep trying to just ignore reality. I mean they've got another thing coming. That's all I gotta say, man. They got another thing coming.
Yeah, I mean, it's just unbelievable. It's completely undeniable at this point what the agenda is. It took me too long to see it, you know. I realized the other day that for years I was sort of a quasi-self-hating white, and I didn't even know it. I didn't even realize it because of the pernicious nature of the propaganda.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we had back at when I used to do college radio, we would get all these public service announcements to play, and there was this one group called the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center, and oh my God, these things were so funny. And every DJ in the metal department, we would play these things constantly, not because we believed what they were saying or we loved it. It was just so funny to hear. I mean, it was just like comic relief. Like they would have like two guys, like one of them, they would have two guys, and they're going to a concert, and one guy doesn't have enough money to get into the show to buy a ticket, and you know, his friend offers to pay for the ticket, and he's like, wow, man, that's great, man. I didn't, you know, I can't believe you're doing that, even though you're Jewish. You know, and like, you know, and it's like, and then like, and the other friend is like, wait a minute, man, what'd you just say? You know, and he's like, man, come on, it's just a joke, you know. He's like, well, you know, what am I supposed to say? I didn't think it's funny. And then it's like this Morgan Freeman type character comes in. You could fight prejudice by, you know, doing this or that. I mean, it's like, you know, just these ridiculous things. There was another one where, like, it was like a black kid trying to get into a white fraternity, or a white kid trying to get into a black fraternity, and the black kid is like the racist, and he's like, yo, man, you know, I'm not gonna let him into my fraternity, man. What would happen if one of us tried to get into one of their fraternities, man? You know, and it's like just this total bullshit thing about, like, just trying to, you know, mix and all this racial inclusion. And, I mean, it's just they pump this shit out, like, 24/7. I mean, if you're not getting it from college or your classroom or your TV program, I mean, it's fucking everywhere, man, at this point. So
I happened to witness a television program called Arrested Development. And are you familiar with this?
Oh, yeah, I've heard of it.
Yeah, it's nothing special, but it was on in a place where I was, and I saw it. And there's a skit in there where one of the characters has created an advocacy group that is protesting circumcision.
Oh, wow.
And it's a whole big joke. And this is like this white gal and her douchebag husband, and so that was like the only reference to that I'd ever seen in the media up to that point.
Oh yeah, I mean that's like these things bleed into pop culture, they bleed into the media. As much as they try to suppress it, at some point it does come out, and a lot of it is in comedy, and that's why I say comedy is a huge weapon. that we can use if it's done right. You know, that's why I'm so proud to be on this network with Mike Sledge, because, I mean, he's personally, I just think he's one of the funniest guys I've heard in the movement. I mean, so, you know, we've got a great chance to change people's minds through sarcasm, through parody, and all that type of thing. And circumcision, I mean, I don't want to get the, you know, I'm sure White C is probably going to call in if we, you know, for the Mohill Minute, if we push this any further. But, you know, circumcision, it made headlines. I mean, you know, with Germany trying to outlaw it, you know, and that's huge. I mean, this is the former Nazi state trying to outlaw circumcision. This is just another Holocaust here we've got on our hands, you know? I mean, it's funny.
Yeah, I just... There's no reason why a group of people shouldn't be able to decide for themselves that they do or do not want to follow certain practices.
Oh, yeah. And you said, like, you were saying, like, how before, when you were undergoing this transitional period in your own psyche, like, what were the things that kind of switched you around? I mean, I don't take you as being a white liberal ever, but, you know, that's the funny part of it, is that even people who are not out there actively engaging for the enemy as, you know, proxies or whatever, or, you know, fighting for, you know, the Nelson Mandela crowd. I mean, it's just the regular average white person and how they view race, how they view history, how they view, you know, all these basic things. They don't even understand.
Yeah.
They don't even understand how brainwashed they are. So, I mean, what was it that led you to coming to Renegade? I mean, how did this whole thing happen?
Well, I've been following the evolution of Renegade since Mike and Kyle were on Oracle, and different things were happening on Blog Talk. But I finally realized that the baseline of, like, how white people at this point, I was born in 1983, so I was in school in the 90s and all that, and it's just common, I don't know how to say it, standard operating procedure at this point for white people to have a completely negative view of their racial identity. And I just realized how damaging that was. Like, I was speculating on all the other fluoride, chemtrails, mind control, whatever else there is, and then it dawned on me that this racial angle is a huge key part of it.
That's great, man. That's great to hear. Well, what do you think about the White Man March?
It sounds great, and I hope people do it wherever they can find the time and place.
Yeah, I mean, that's the goal. That's the objective, to have one big one somewhere where there's you know, a majority of us all in the same spot, but also to have everybody doing it simultaneously in their own capacity wherever they might find themselves. And if everybody does it, we all put it on tape, or, you know, just get a recording of it and then upload it. I mean, just think of that, the power that will be propaganda-wise to have, you know, dozens of different marches sporadically all over the place, you know, wherever they might be. I mean, even if it's not out in public and it's just a group of people in your own backyard with a, you know, just with a gathering of people. I mean, I think that when you get people together and it's not just one or two guys or, you know, a small number of folks, once you show that there's a lot of people, it becomes the social angle part of it is very powerful. And I think that's one of the big problems that our movement has had is we spend too much time focusing on numbers and statistics and logic and reason. And, you know, really, we should be thinking about how idea spread, how trends start. You know, that's really the key to winning this kind of thing, because it all comes down to just making it fashionable to be a racialist. And once we get that far, you know, that's there's no stopping it. But
yeah, and even, you know, just I think when you get any number of people together with one more or less cohesive purpose on one date, no matter where they are, I think there is an energy, a bioenergetic sort of thing that goes on. Because like you were talking about before with biology and DNA and beliefs and thoughts affecting all being interrelated, you know, I think there is this other level of communication that goes on with life forms. So we can all be on a certain wavelength at a certain time, and even if you're not among a group of people doing a march or whatever, if you're just alone by fire or with a small group of people, like you said, it's all good. And I know from experience that it's real easy to do a banner drop. Just make one and do it by yourself or with a friend.
Oh, yeah, man. And a million things you can do. You can, you know, if you want to just put the mantra on there, you know, that'll work. I mean, there's just a number of different slogans. Very easy to understand slogans or memes that...
I was trying to figure out how much space 14 words could take up in a manageable size of fabric and whatnot.
There you go.
The logistics of a banner, you know.
Right. Well, shit, man, we've got plenty of time to rack our heads about this kind of thing. We've got a few months, so, you know, but, hey, I mean, the day will be dawning upon us before we know it, so we might as well just start the conversation now. But, yeah, man, thanks for the call. I got a couple other callers.
Sure.
I got a 414. I'm going to leave you on, man, and you chime in whenever you want. I'm going to go to 414. 414, what's your name? Where you calling from?
Hey, Dana, it's Bill.
Hey, Bill.
Hey, Bill.
What's going on?
I just tuned in, so, but I heard that's James, right?
Yeah, hey, Bill.
Yeah, do you want to take part in the, in a march here in southeast Wisconsin?
Yeah, we should talk about it. How could I get a hold of you?
Yeah, you know, way in the past you brought up getting in touch, and I don't know, I tried it in the chat a few times. I mean, my email's all over the place. I mean, I'm on Blog
okay.
Talk. I used to be Facebook. They just deleted me, but...
well,
I mean,
I'll find you.
Are you in the... Can you see the chat?
No, not right now. I don't really go there.
Yeah, well, just, you know, Bill... I think Might is Right Power Hour, Blog Talk, or Bill Rye is on YouTube, all sorts of ways.
All right.
We ought to...
Well, Bill, would you mind giving your email out over here? Yeah, what's your email?
Yeah. Yeah, I'll put it in the chat. Well, I'll just tell you. TWM1938@hotmail.com. T is in Tom, W is in William, M is in Metzger. TWM. And I found out that's just a mistake. It's a relative. I'm pretty sure that's his birth date. Metzger, and of course the two last ones are his initials. I don't know about the middle one, but it has nothing to do with him.
Great.
All right,
man.
Got it.
Sounds good, man. All right, I'm going to get to 404. Let me pull him up. Actually, Bill, did you have anything more you wanted to say, or did you
go ahead.
Okay, I'll pull
I'll
up
stay on in case, maybe.
All right, 404, what's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hi, this is Hank.
Oh, hey, Heathen Hank.
Yeah.
All right. Oh, hey, what's going on, brother?
Good. Calling in a little late to work. Hopefully I'll plan on getting Skype and everything and a mic, so don't have to call through the phone and get a little clear voice. Probably going to be sticking around Renegade for a while.
Yeah, well, we'll link up on Skype. And then we'll do a whole show together, man. I mean, we only got like 18 minutes left of this stream. But I'd love for you to stay on, man. It's great to finally talk to you. Every time I see a comment in the chat room, man, I'm like blown away, and then I just copy it and paste it, and you know, I'm keeping track of all this because I like your mind, man. You got a great hold on things.
Well, I mean, if you got a dead end corporate job, you have a lot of time to screw around on the internet, so you can kind of figure stuff out.
So you're working in the belly of the beast, and
I work at Fifth Third Bank, and I probably don't want to go into specifics. It's pretty low on the rung, but it's pretty classic office space kind of lifestyle, you know, HR, and you know, I've already had about two diversity classes, and it's pretty corporate. I'm gonna try to get the hell out pretty soon, but I mean, it's a good way to get your, you know, resume, I suppose.
Well, that's kind of, man, I mean, we're all pretty much the same position here. You know, very few of us like are able to actually just go back to the land and lose our jobs and stop punching the juke time clock, as Keith used to say on Truth Militia. And I mean, it's not easy, but I think it's great that we got people like you out there working. You know, people in insurance companies. I mean, there's white nationalists everywhere. You know, I mean, we just gotta find each other. You know.
Well, you know, more than anything, hell, if I could. I mean, a lot of stuff I do, and we do contractually with other people, and you know, we have so much of the damn efficiency we lose because pretty much we're just having to deal with, you know, liberal HR, you know, fat white lady bitches and black women, all these people who just make a huge drag. And if I could just find maybe a few good white guys and a white girl or two and run a company, and we all think the same way and feel the same way, it would be smooth as all get out. I mean.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be too hard. I mean, that'd be kind of a networking thing. You have to keep it down low that you run this little business. And that's the way things are, too, going. I mean, you don't really get picked up in a big company anymore. All these companies just want to do contract. So, and if we, and might as well just, you know, might as well just do contract work with another bit of white people and people you see the same way with. And, I mean, damn, it's like walking on eggshells with some of the more, like a female superior.
That's
a modern corporate.
Oh yeah, there's nothing worse than having to work with. I mean, a lot of the women in the workplace too. I mean, they're kind of on a power trip, and once they get in a position where they're the superior to a man, it's like it's pretty hard. I mean, I work with some. Well, whatever. I don't even want to get into it, but I mean, Hank, you sound like you're from. Are you from the South or the Midwest or what?
Yeah, I grew up in Atlanta. Yeah, I went to Martin Luther King High School, so that's where you learn to be racial really quick.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Was that the actual name of the high school?
Yeah, my dad moved in, and he moved in for a job, and he started off pretty low in the company. I was able to go to a private school for my last 2 years, but I was a freshman and sophomore at Martin Luther King High School because we lived in downtown Atlanta, and it was you learn pretty quick as a snowflake to put your hands up and stay low, and that nigger's your trouble.
Wow, yeah. that's wild, man. Martin Luther King High School. Well, oh my God, you know, if we don't do something, we're gonna have our kids going to Nelson Mandela High School. That's what's
yeah,
coming. Next,
oh, absolutely,
so.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. Go ahead, Bill.
I want to see what you think of this. Now, it's my opinion that there's a lot more people out there that are on the same page as us, or at least in the same chapter of the book, as you know, than a lot of us think. Now, when I first looked into all this in terms of the Jews and you know the whole deal. I initially wasn't going to get involved at all because I'm a very rational individual, and I looked into things and, you know, the whole movement going way back, saw a lot of footage and pictures and, you know, video, and I was thinking that, and, you know, and I knew what people are like around me, and I already knew that the masses were asses before I heard Tom Metzger say anything like that. I just didn't, you know, word it that way. And even when I did get involved, it was very low-key. I even used a throwaway phone for my initial contact with Reverend Peterson, things like this, okay? And so I just know, just my way of looking at it, there's probably 2 to 3, maybe even 5 to 10 times as many people that don't, you know, that are very cautious. I know a lot of people make fun of them. Oh, they're lone wolves, a bunch of cowards and all that. I don't see it that way. I see them as being rational and thinking to themselves, why should I risk this, that, and the other thing without, you know, they're just trying to weigh the benefit, you know, versus the cost. And at some point, these people, I don't think they're just like the while back on the round table, he sometimes goes by Bob, sometimes Jeff there in Idaho. He was, he called them a bunch of closet faggots. And also I know when I was somewhat involved, it was mainly Peterson there, but he received help from people like that when they needed something. They're out there. There's more people than we think that are out there, and we shouldn't be ridiculing them and criticizing. People can do what they want, but when things, there will be a time, I think, when things will start to, you know, coalesce more, and more people will come out when it seems sensible to do so. And that's what I like about this march. I'm not saying that necessarily is going to be the key thing, but it is being done in a way that you know, that I think is, from what I heard Mike, you know, on the round table talk about, and Kyle, that I think is sensible. Something where some of those individuals might think, hey, if there's one of some decent size going on in my area, you know, I might take part. This isn't like the other things. It's more low risk. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, you know, my attitude is that, you know, I don't like to denigrate anybody in the movement, regardless of where they're coming from, but you know, at some point, if we don't all start to decide that, you know, let's just cause some chaos here, let's make some noise, you know, really nothing's going to ever get started if we're all just kind of sitting in the shadows. And I'm just kind of saying this out of defense of Jeff. I don't think he was really attacking the lone wolf strategy. I mean, it's just the idea but as a strategy overall, individually, it might work, you know, if you, you know, I'd rather see us all salvage ourselves and not, you know, get put on the chopping block for nothing. I mean, that's why it's important. But if we don't start to take a little risk and make a little sacrifice, or, you know, put our heads out on the table, nothing is ever going to happen. I mean, we got to be honest.
There's just things that you can't – I'm just obviously giving you my opinion. Now, sometimes when I say lone wolf, maybe I should use a different word. Some of them, by lone wolf, you know, that might be people who are out doing certain things that they just keep themselves, or maybe doing nothing but burrowing into the system. And others are just people who are on the same page and maybe shouldn't be called lone wolves. They're just not going to get involved until they think it makes sense. But what I'm getting at is there will be that time, Dana. I mean, maybe not, but you know, things are going to continue to worsen for white people in this country and in all of our, in the countries that white people founded. I think there will be a time. It's just we can't make that time come, I don't think. There's a way that it could be made to come. It's just I don't see it happening that way. I mean, if people took the the Campbell approach, and there was enough of them, yeah, that could snowball. But I don't just see it happening because nobody's going to go out and be first. They don't think there's enough. You know, it's just a tough thing. But at some point, I think it will happen, and these people will come out, and it might not be wise for a lot of them to come out until that time is right. Because you're saying now, because you're hot and you're excited. People been like that though for decades, thinking when is it, you know. So what about the people who did come out 20 years ago? Did it do them any good? Or, you know, 30 years ago, 15 years ago? What about me 10 years ago? Maybe the time wasn't right.
true buildup. And think, though, if those people didn't come out those 10 years ago, we would just feel like all of a sudden we're the only people who thought these thoughts just now. I mean, we kind of have to feel as though we're building up to something, I think. I do agree on the most of the front that. I also, too, think, I mean, everyone's different, of course, but we have to think of ourselves as a lone wolf strategy, but definitely have to think that it's not going to be the same for everyone, but if a lot of us, I mean, like myself, I'm pretty much ready. I'm starting to kind of stop giving a crap. I don't really have a career ahead of me, and I think it's kind of important for a lot of people like us to just say fuck it and put our names out there and say we're white nationalists and say we're okay with it.
Well, that's fine.
Put a face to it, yeah. I understand the person wants to lay low, you know, if they have a reason to lay low, though. I mean, if they have a really good career and they have money they can offer the movement, or if they're, like, in a big organization and do better on the inside for us, I'm fine with that. But, the lay low and wait, it's wait for what, you know?
And there's more to it than that. For example, the individual I'm talking about used to use the name, I mean, he's used Jeff and Bob, and I'm not against this, okay? But he's using some tactics of the lone wolf tactics himself. He wrote an article there recently against the lone wolf concept, and he didn't give his name. I want to ask him on air, since he's not since he's so critical of lone wolves, and I think it would be stupid for him to do that. Why not give out your name, address, your employer? You know. Because he's being smart. He's using some of the very same tactics of the people he's ridiculing because he hasn't looked into it.
Well, the problem today, though, is that you go out, you're giving your name, address, and employer. The second
you're not giving it to everyone is what I'm trying to get at. Some people have the idea that if you're on the Internet, if you've ever chatted somewhere, it's true that there's organizations out there that monitor maybe the NSA, all sorts of things, right? But they have entire warehouses full of data they haven't even mined through yet. That doesn't mean that, in other words, there's all sorts of things that I've done that in this local area, now there are some people that I've already got prank calls since being involved here, but it could be from local people here that know about me. But what I'm getting at is most of the people around here that I run across, most of the people when I was in the business world and stuff, they didn't know anything about me. You know what I'm saying? There are ways to keep yourself, you know, low-key from certain groups around you. I mean, it doesn't mean that you're not known, that there isn't somebody out there monitoring you. I think there's all sorts of lists that the Jews do, and go ahead.
Well, Bill, let me just say real quickly, and then I'll give it to Hank. You know, I don't think it's so much about lone wolf. It's just more about, being willing to become just to show your face in public. You don't have to give your name and who you are. I mean, you just got to show your face under a banner somehow. And if we're not willing to do that, then we don't have a movement. All we have is a collection of individuals kind of hiding out in the shadows. And there's never going to be a movement
Go ahead.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I'm just saying action. There's got to be some kind of action. I mean, you look at the leftists, right? How did the leftists gain power? I mean, they organized, they networked, they had protests, they had sit-ins.
They had the support of the power structure. What I'm trying to get at is study how the Cubans did it. Everybody just thinks so once they got to the point of organization. They didn't start that way. We're in enemy territory. Now, it's not as bad as in Germany. It might be worse in certain respects because at least in Germany and other European countries, they know that they've got all these laws on the books, so it forces those that are the wisest, I think, among them to play it lone wolf. Here we have this illusion that we don't need to do that because we've got freedom of speech. What I'm trying to get at is you say we all need to get together. You should read the latest article by Nicholson. I think what the idea of this unity thing, I don't buy any of that. Unity in the sense of the 14 words. That's all of our goal. But in terms, the more organizations that are out there, the more splintered we are, the harder it is to determine who is the leader. There isn't really one. There's all these different groups. The more of them they are, it's a fine. Carolyn Yeager likes to focus on the Holocaust, World War II, and what else? You know, the Nazis and all that. But she's wrong in the sense that she thinks everyone should focus on that, these remembrance societies, you know, where they're kind of just thinking back to the past. But that
I,
is... That,
I, I agree with that. All I'm saying is that, you know, at some point, I think what Hank is saying is there's millions of disenfranchised whites out there who really have very little to lose. I mean, what do you,
right.
you know, you're going to lose your McDonald's job? I mean, really, what's the point of holding on or trying to salvage anything like that? You know,
that's a good sign for us. There's more and more people now. I don't believe the economy is ever going to get back to where it had been in the past, and it was always being bled. It was never what it could have been if we didn't have parasites running it. But it's going to continue to deteriorate. More and more white people are going to feel they have nothing to lose. And then more and more of them are. I'm not telling people don't come out or anything. People do what they want to do. But there will be a time. I mean, if you come out, I'm guessing where you want to go with this is that, okay, people need to come out there. We need to get this organization together. They will crush it. They will cry. We can't play it that way, is my opinion. It's ineffective. If we
Bill,
do that,
Bill,
you're going to see
Bill.
A repeat of what happened with the Golden Dawn. They're going to take out the leadership. Everybody's going to scurry like rats. If necessary, they'll assassinate
people. I don't know
why
everybody is saying the Golden Dawn is crushed. The Golden Dawn is not crushed. I don't know why people are saying that. I mean, if anything, you know, what they've done is a huge mistake. I mean, you watch the next elections, they're probably going to sweep it, man. I mean,
they can't. Their party has been declared a criminal. Now the Golden Dawn story isn't played out, but where I see that they have their hope now is that enough of them have learned that there is no solution to the political process. You have a better chance in Europe because they have parliamentary situations going rather than how we have them here. Where if you get 14% of the vote, you get 14% of the seats. We don't operate that way. But at least there they do, so they've got that option. But there is no way under this earth that you're going to – people will say Hitler. Do I have to go through the differences of the 1930s in Germany into what we have today? And especially in the U.S. where demographically it is impossible. There is not the white votes, okay, to win anything at a national level. But in these European countries, if what they have learned is that you cannot expect through the very system you want to tear down, and if they don't realize that, they will. We need to tear down these systems, or when they collapse, replace them, okay? This is at least my view. And so that's where it might not be over yet, but some people are saying, well, they're more popular than ever. Well, again, they don't have a majority of the white support over there yet. When they say more popular, they're talking maybe 20% of the population, all right, instead of 14. So they have went up. But no, they're finished as a political party. They're done.
I don't know. I disagree with you entirely. Hank, what do you think about this, man?
I think we kind of have to think the fact that, well, also with, you know, with any kind of radical political movement, you're doing something wrong if they're not trying to arrest you. I mean, pretty much we should be scared by the fact that the system here doesn't fear us so much that they completely ignore us in a lot of ways, and then every once in a while they feel like they can deal us by sending out a little bit of like a, you know, tar and feather brigade and smear just maybe like Craig Cobb or something like that. It's pretty much the standard forte. They just kind of, you know, one of us will pop out, the media will show up, they'll be like, oh, look how stupid they are, you know, look at these white nationalists, you know, look white people, this is what weird white racialists do, this is what they're like, they're evil, and then they move on and go watch football. And we got to break – enough of us just put a face on this movement and get it out of the Internet. I'm not talking about
they know
a
what to
superstructure.
Go after. That's all
yeah,
I'm
well,
trying to say.
Yeah, I'm not talking about a super – you know, Golden Dawn is like a strong political force that has men on the streets and has, you know, a distribution system for charity and probably has a militant wing.
Not anymore. The party has been declared a criminal organization. All
yeah,
their
Bill,
funding
Bill,
has been
Bill.
Withdrawn.
Bill, this is the problem with your attitude. Your attitude is a fear-based attitude of, if we do this, they're going to do this to us. You know, we got to stop thinking like that, man. We got to stop worrying about – they're not going to do shit, man. They're a paper tiger, man. They have nothing, man.
To the two guys, the two young guys that were assassinated. Tell that to
Bill,
the people that
Bill,
are sitting in
Bill,
prison.
Is,
tell
Bill,
that to Craig Cobb.
Yeah, but Bill, if you think that we're going to be able to ever get anywhere Without facing, you know, we're gonna be murdered, man. This is what we're being murdered every day. I mean, that's the whole point of this.
What I'm trying to get at is there's going to be a time. If you must know this, Dana, I believe that. I understand that. I know that I think it's going to be the bloodiest thing the world has ever seen when the United States faces these, you know, gets to the point where it makes sense. But I don't see that, you know, it will happen on its own. We can't just make it happen because we're out there saying, hey, I'm out in the open. I want everyone else to come out. There will be a time, and no, I don't believe it's going to happen through everybody coming out. It would if we had millions and millions of people with us, but we don't, all right? So that's not going to be the way I think it's going to go down, all right? It's
right,
going to go down more along the lines of, you know, not even things I can discuss.
Well, all these people that you think, and I agree with you, that exist out there, you know, if they don't see some kind of, as Hank said, some kind of presence, some kind of, you know, signs, that something is starting to coagulate here. What is going to motivate them to want to?
I can tell you what. I have to be careful how I say it, but I brought it up before. People will know. Here's the way I looked at it. I know I'm not the only rational person in the world. When I first got involved and I learned about all these things, I learned about the order. I learned about the oath that they took of what would happen to somebody who betrayed them. And then later on, with the Church of the Creator, we had Evola, Reverend Fox, betraying, testifying. One of them was a plant to begin with, FBI informant. And then you know all the stories. This has been happening over and over and over again. And what has been the never mind karma, what's been the real-world results for these individuals? Nothing. People that are rational will know that this is the time you can gauge things by the hottest part of something. You can look at a country by, or a group or an ideology by where it flashes up, where people sometimes might not be the wisest or whatever, but where you see that it's boiling over. And when I start to read news stories of people, like I've mentioned just a minute ago, something's negative happening to them. They're being taken care of. They're getting their karma payback
right
in the real world. Then,
Bill, can I say something?
Yeah, go ahead,
yeah.
Hank.
I'm just saying, our problem right now is that, and I talk a lot to people like this, if I start getting into a conversation with a white person who is maybe a conservative and maybe is somewhat open to this, like I kind of feel like there's an entry somewhere. They literally think that white racialism would be, say, me being at the gym, and a black guy would be like, hey, man, give me a spot. And I'd be like, no, fuck off, nigger. Like, that's what they think our views mean. Our image has been so controlled and tarnished by them that's why we're really not getting any ground going. I mean, no one really wants to talk about going down to America yet. You know, like, nationalists in Europe actually got cred. They have a subculture, a street culture. I mean, that's why the state's going hard after them. They're the next level. We're 10 steps behind.
Well, all but the Golden Dawn and maybe the one in was it Hungary? The rest of them are all diversions. They're not even run by at the top by people who are sincere. They're run by the enemy. They're phony opposition. That's what the BNP is. That's what most of those parties are.
Yeah,
I'm
about
that. Cast a Pound, Nordic Resistance.
Exactly.
I mean,
identitarians in France. I mean, they're everywhere.
Right.
Man. They're everywhere.
And what are they? And how are they? You know. I thought now, and same in Germany with when they do those flash marches and all, they're not the, you know, they're not taking some of the advice that you guys are giving.
What are you talking about? They're out there in the street. That's exactly the advice we're giving.
Well, that's
we're
talking about with this march coming up. That might bring some more people in. But what I'm trying to get at is the idea of just having open organizations.
You don't have to. I mean, it's just a matter of networking and starting to do something that shows you're out there and in the public. I mean, you know, if we have the attitude that we're all going to be arrested and thrown in jail or killed, you know, no one's going to do any. I mean, you don't have to do anything illegal to get out there and present a positive image of what white nationalism is to show. You know, that there are people that think like this. I mean, that's really the step one of the program here. And like Hank just said, if we don't do these things, we're never going to get to the next step to even have a viable movie.
And you think that I'm being negative. I'm trying to tell you I believe that is going to happen. It's just that not going to be done the way you want it to be done. And if people were to follow that advice, it would never happen is what I'm trying to get at. We're going to take the people that we need down the road, and they're going to be taken out. They're not going to be there for us. They're going to be we're going to ruin them. We need some people out there to have some damn money. We need some people out there to take care of their damn family. Some of them have kids, families. They're trying to make something.
I'm just saying that we have a large amount of people who really don't have a good enough excuse that they have a lot to lose in favor of saving the white race. And there's nothing wrong. I mean, they can put on a suit and tie. They can go out there to a march or a speech
Some of them have the attitude that, and again, I'm saying I believe this is going to change. I think it's moving along. But some of them have the attitude, and Dana, you've expressed it yourself, they're not fucking worth saving yet. I don't give a – I mean, the overwhelming majority, I'm just telling you my opinion here, of our race are sorry bunches, pieces of shit. But I still understand that they are, you know, I'm part of that. I'm part of the race. So I need that to survive. I care about future generations, okay? We can upbreed the quality of the herd down the road. I care about the decent members of my race out there, like you guys. And I care about the great ones from the past that we have to think about our ancestors. So it's all for that. And I also understand at the same time where I say they're sorry pieces of shit, they're programmed. The other races are even more lemming-like. So let's keep that in mind as well when we criticize our people. They're less, a little bit less lemming-like than other races of people. That is just a human trait, okay, that we have to deal with.
Right, well, Bill, you know, Hank, before you go, and then I want to get the other guys in.
I just wanted to say it's so important because if we don't put our image out there, they will make our image for us, and it ain't going to be pretty. I mean, it's going to be nothing but, you know, white power Bill who's on drugs and looks like an idiot in a Nazi suit, you know. So we better – there's no waiting. It's you put yourself as the face of white nationalism because, I mean, if you don't, they'll do it for us. I mean, they're afraid of us.
You know, I know people that are what I'm talking about personally that don't come out, that haven't come out, and some of them might take part in a local march here because of the way it's being set up. They're there. I'm just not as, you know, I'm just giving my opinion. I'm not as concerned about what a lot of people are saying, we need unity and all that. I don't think that's the answer at all. I think things are developing. I think the more small groups that we have out there, the more different approaches that they use to bring people in, the better it is, and harder it is for the enemies to keep track of us. The more different angles of propaganda they have to come up with to go against us, the more money they have to spend to keep track to find out who is the leadership, who's running this, who's running that. I think that's all great. The more of that that's going on, the better. The more splintered we are. I don't want us all getting all this unity crap. Let's all get together and unite. No, it's somebody who's a Christian, well, they're more likely brought in by a Christian. And as he says in the article, Nifson, they'll run for the hills if some guy who's into the joyous Satan site is the guy who's supposed to bring him in. People feel more comfortable with their own type. We can have all these different organizations. We can disagree on things. We can battle it out over ideas and let the best things rise to the top. You know, go ahead.
I'm just saying the amount of organization we're talking about isn't any bigger than any church does every Sunday. You know, like that's all we're talking about. Just media. I mean, we can make something similar to the IRA or the, you know, Revolutionary Leftist Party later. I think that's a couple years down the line. We got a few more baby steps to do.
Yeah, and then Bill, when you are kind of counting on external factors to be the catalyst of this thing to happen, you know, those things may never come. That's the other problem
The situation will continue to deteriorate for more and more people, especially young people, that are going to start to realize, hey, I don't really have that bright of a future. Hey, I don't like the way things are. Hey, I got to go to Martin Luther King High? I got to be treated like fucking shit? More and more people. You say to yourself, you guys always, the Jews overplay their kind. Well, they're doing it big time, and they're going to continue to do it. They want to exterminate us all. And people that keep saying their power is an illusion, I don't buy that one fucking second. It's real. And I know people who are really suffering right fucking now. You telling them it ain't real? Okay, it is real.
Yeah, but
this
Phil,
is
you're
real.
You're,
they will crush anybody who does it stupid.
Well, you're misinterpreting the idea that their power is an illusion. It's an illusion in the sense that overnight, I mean, it could be crushed. I mean, if we just became self-aware, it's a matter of it's just like in the Terminator.
Sure. If everybody followed Campbell's advice, and you've heard him, yeah, everybody who thinks like us, if they were to go out and do that, or as Bob or Jeff says, 10,000 people with bolt action rifles, I mean, yes, it's weak, it's rotten to the core, and it could happen, could, if, but the problem is that's not going to happen.
We're not really talking about that. All we're talking about is no different than what the freaking Martin Luther King people did when they. I mean, for a second, let's just put ourselves in their shoes, okay? In the '60s, in racist America, in the '50s, when they were fighting segregation, they were fighting us, okay? You had a white power structure at that time that they going against.
You had the three legs of a power structure are big finance, who run the Federal Reserve since 1913.
Right.
Jews, the media, who ran the media at that time. And when you have those two, you run the government, because what are politicians? Political whores. All three legs of the tripod of power, the real tripod of power, the hidden hand of power, were on their side. They formed these groups.
That was
all for public show for the masses.
But when they went out there, they got hosed down by cops, man.
Local areas, right, where they didn't have control, where the local big-bellied, dumbass sheriff, wasn't in support of that. I ain't gonna let all these goddamn niggas get away with this. The local folk, but the national power structure was behind this. The media was behind it. They were the Jews organized these very groups. They organized NAACP. Every speech that King gave was written by a Jew, all
right? Yeah, but the common attitude of the average white person at that time was against integration. I mean, that's a fact. So they found a way to overpower and overcome that. If they could do it, we can do it. That's all I'm
saying.
They
did it with media help already. On the music that was being put out, they were pushing all this black music. Already in the movies, they were pushing that angle. Already, they had everything they needed at their side to be able to make it happen, to control the way the story was being told, to play on our emotions, to play on the masses' emotions. Look at these poor Negroes and being hit with the water hose. Of course, they don't show ahead of time. They were throwing bricks at the cops. They were following that, what's his name, Linsky, whatever the hell, Rules for Radicals, right?
Right,
a beautifully laid out plan. They had massive money behind them. They had the media behind them. They had the federal government, but not entirely, because I don't know about the FBI.
I'm just saying, it's not that much to ask to just have white people go out and be white. That's all I'm saying. I'm not telling you.
They're doing that.
Government.
They're out there being white. They're being a bunch of sorry pieces of shit, because that's what white people are.
Not really. I mean, they're afraid to even white nationalists in public are afraid to admit to their own views. I mean, if you take a lot of them, they really won't hold up to their own beliefs. But I want to give it to Hank and then the rest of the guys, Jason, whoever else is on. Go ahead.
No, I'll just, with you, Dana, I know that there's definitely a big betrayal during that period. Power structure was definitely against white America. But the main reason they won is because they controlled the perception of what the civil rights was. It was the average white American perceived it as like a, I don't really want integration, but segregation is mean to blacks, and, so it's just too harsh, and we need to find compromise and things like that. And that's what they found. It was the perception. I mean, even Martin Luther King actually complained about that the Southern police weren't tough enough. He wished they were harder. That was an interesting thing. That's something hidden from history, that Martin Luther King was just so angry that the Southern police were so reticent about not just going straight up to beating four off. So, and that's what, so it's all perception. You know, we really don't have to do much to fix our perception. I mean, what comes to mind is there's a Salon article about, I think her Salon or Huffington Post, and some lady interviewed Richard Spencer. And in this article, you could tell she was flabbergasted that this racist white nationalist was nice and well-spoken and wore a suit. Like, literally, that was all Richard Spencer did. And this lefty was fucking, blew her fucking mind. You know, it, like, we really do not have much to do right now to make big leaps in terms of perceptions of us into white America.
All right. Who, anyone else on that wants to comment? We just lost a caller. Oh, actually, I have, let's see here. We've got, I want to bring in this person here. I'm going to add them to the call. They wanted to say something. So, but go ahead, guys. You can talk while I'm doing this.
But Bill, I definitely think you're right on a lot of fronts. I think we're talking past each other a little bit, but I'm kind of glad to hear that. And now times a lot in the movement, people seem to be arguing more and more about how it should be done, which is a hell of a lot better than arguing about, you know, whether it's not the G's. So
I just don't think it's going to happen through the ways that people want it to happen. And that by happen, I mean that we're going to get people that are on our page in power. Okay, I don't think it's going to happen the way that people would like it to happen or envision it to happen. It's going to happen in a way that we can't really even discuss, and that's the only way I believe it's going to happen. But there's going to be stages before then, and I think we're moving toward that. And I don't think it's wise for people that. They can do what they want, and people can give the advice they want, but to get out there and coalesce right at this point around some organization for everybody to come out in the open and let their views be known and show their face, what everybody wants them to do, I just don't think it's wise. It would be if we had millions of us. Yeah, we don't. Right? But
well,
people can do what they want. All I know is, I received a message here, and I'm going to call him back as soon as I get off air here, and I think it might be good news of somebody that I know personally that might be another individual going to be taking part in this march who is of the type I mentioned before, who's got the sense, I think it's sense, to kind of stay low-key until it's worthwhile to take any risks.
Volker, did you want to chime in at all?
I just got on.
Yeah, you're on.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I just got on.
Got on what?
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, you're here, man. We're just talking about, like, just the white man march and, you know, whether or not people should come out or not and, you know, the idea of organizing public and just the general concept of that.
Well, you could be an easy target. I don't know what to say. Hold on.
All right, well, I got him on if he wants to come back and jump back in. You know, basically my attitude is that, you know,
Mikkel is on.
Oh, okay. I mean, we're talking about different stages of revolution, and people seem to think that we want people to go Rambo, you know, and that's not really what we're saying. All we're saying is, you know, just to show your face, present a positive image of white nationalism.
Well, some people,
and,
I'm trying to get at, some people realize, and I was the same way, I'm not going to get into personal reasons I decided to go a different way, but they realize that, no, I'm not going to do that until it is Rambo time, because I want to be here when it's Rambo time. I don't want to be destitute and flipping burgers and lost my wife because we ain't got no money. That's the main reason for divorce, economic, and all this kind of stuff. I want to stay in a position to where when it's Rambo time, I'm ready.
How do we get to Rambo time? That's the thing.
I'm trying to say we don't...
All right, Bill, let Hank go.
All right.
I just think this movement for a long time has been relying on outside externalities, and it's time to think of that. And I'm telling you, you're giving examples of people who I say should not go out, of course. People who have a lot of kids, I think. People who have careers that could help us in the future. But, I mean, hell, if you're a young white person in America, like, you know, no kids, you know, you got no dependents, you got no career prospect, you know what? It's okay, so hold, you know, try
so
to stop
you
yourself from being
happen?
A Google fella.
Huh?
I do. The Rambo movie you're talking about?
No. I'm saying these people that you say that are young and have no future, well, don't you think that is happening? That these I think that's most of the people, a good percentage of the people within
true.
The movement are like that.
True. Yeah, true. But I'm saying to expand those numbers, you have young people who have no future who ain't necessarily going to be white nationalists and don't want to come out to be white nationalists because they don't really like the image of the movement. To the people who are hardcore right now, these
guys. Well, I look at it like this. Okay, there's all sorts of people out there that I know, and I'm thinking of a particular person in my head that I consider to be the typical lemming. If I want to take the temperature of what the average yokel out there thinks, I'll talk to this guy. And I don't want those people. Okay, you're never going to get them. They're worthless pieces of shit. They will never be involved at any level. So there are young people out there that have no future, and they might at some level realize that, but they're not going to come to us no matter what the hell image is out there because they're pussies. They're worthless pieces of shit. So let's forget about them, all right? But there are a tiny percentage of the population, and it's small, that we're ever going to be able to reach, no matter if we control the damn media. Well, I take that back. If you control the media, you control the mind of the masses. Let me take that back.
Well, okay, let's expand our tiny percentage that we reach, though. I'm saying, like, I think a big problem with the Internet white nationalist movement is it can sometimes feel larger than it is. And we need to understand that there are just huge people out there who just don't know we're here. They just simply don't know. They could be the most verbally racist in the waiting. And they, I mean, I have a buddy of mine who, you know, I just showed him the damn websites and his mind was damn blown. It was, we can't really think of ourselves as like somehow the fact that we're not, you know, people are engaging us right now means that everyone's rejecting us and that we're just some hardcore minority and everyone else is just a stupid lemming.
That's a great point, man. I tend to think that virtually every blue-collar white person out there that is suffering through this system, would find an appeal in our message. I mean, it's just a matter of them learning about us, you know. I mean, and how do they find us? I mean, sure, they might see, like, a Southern Poverty Law Center documentary or an Anti-Defamation League hit piece here and there and know that there's a few guys around. But I mean, geez, we got thousands of websites.
No, they're not going to be interested in Renegade, okay? You're talking about the baby Jesus. And then there's other individuals that don't want to hear, they're glorifying the Nazis. Some of these blue-collar people you're talking about, maybe they can be reached by David Duke. There's different approaches, but a lot of them, there's just so many things that have to be overcome with them. They're patriotic, they believe in the Constitution and the flag. There's just a lot of things to be dealt with when you're talking about the herd. So,
yeah,
and I
think that race really undercuts all of that. I mean, really, race is so biological of a principle that you don't have to go. You don't have to really get into all this esoteric stuff and deep philosophical ideological stuff. To get people involved.
Right,
on a personal level is all I'm saying. So.
Well, I believe, I don't know, you probably didn't catch most of the show, and anybody, any people that have ruled, you know, that are in rulership positions understand, you don't play on like you just said, it works on people like us, but for most people, and I'm saying like 95%+ of people are lemming-like. That's just how people are. You're not going to play on them by giving them all these facts, but these videos that people are putting out where they highlight these brutal non-white-on-white crimes and these articles being written with the pictures, the stuff being put on Facebook, that appeals, whether people realize they're doing it or not, right, they are appealing to what works, fear and hatred. Those are, you don't play on the love. You can go out there and put all this stuff about how you should love your people. Look at all these beautiful white children, red hair, blonde hair, blue eyes, black hair, and then look at all the things we've done in the past. That doesn't work, right? That's part of it, but on its own, that doesn't move people. The emotions that move people are fear and anger, and people should fear the destruction of the race. They should fear the future that is going to be there for their children if we continue along this path. Fear is a protective emotion. It alerts us to threats that are out there. Forget about the goofy goddamn Christian idea that fear is a negative emotion. We wouldn't live to adulthood if we didn't have fear. We'd walk in a damn street and get hit by a car. So, and same with
right.
hatred.
Okay, right. Well, it's fear of the destruction of our race that motivates us, but I'm saying where fear becomes bad is where it's this paranoia that
right,
so,
we know.
This paranoia is so rampant in the movement, and I mean, when you say things like, oh, they're going to take us out, or they're going to do this, or they're going to do that. Look, man, they still have a legal, I mean, let's be honest, man. I mean, yes, Obama can assassinate anybody he wants, but how many people is he really assassinating? I mean, I'm sure there are a lot of quote-unquote terrorists that are being killed behind the scenes that we haven't heard about, but they're not going to be killing or even jailing.
No,
they're not
that's
gonna,
because
even,
we don't have anything that powerful.
They
you notice though when they did get
that's
something.
Why, I mean that's why I'm saying you don't have to do anything that's ultimately going to endanger your bodily harm to the point where you're going to be thrown in prison or you're going to be killed. All it's about is just going out and talking with people. I mean that's really step one. And once you have enough connection and network and you start to see more and more people get involved, you know, then it becomes more of a threat. I mean, that's what Hank said, is right now we're so pathetic, we're not a threat at all, and that's that basically shows that if we don't go all in at some point soon, then it's just relying on chance. It's relying on I just would hope that we would at least take the steps to try to have a action where something is planned out. And if you look at how our enemies took control and subverted us and usurped us, the same exact tactics can be used against them. And you don't have to really do anything stupid. I mean, you have to be smart about it, but we got to kind of lose the fear of the repercussions at this point, because the risk, like you said, the cost benefit is if we don't do this, then we're going to be completely under the heel of our enemies in a potential police state where they can kill you and they can jail you for your beliefs. So I mean, do we want to let it go that far?
Arguably, that's already the case.
Right, I'm trying to point that out. If you had been I did thorough research on this movement before I got involved. The woman who used to run the Aryan Baby Fund, she wasn't even hardcore. She's still in fucking prison, all right? They went and framed her because she had gasoline in the fucking shed, and there was nails in a toolbox. They said that could be used for a bomb, all right? I'm trying to say that when they think that something like in the Golden Dawn. Now we're their jewel, so they're going to be a lot harder here. But when they think there is a threat and they don't wait until it's an actual big time, once something gets around 14%, and it doesn't have to be an actual movement like they had, it could just be their polling. They're taking the temperature of the country all the time. And when they see that things get to a certain percentage where it's a credible threat in the near future, that's when they act. And I'm just trying to be, maybe it doesn't come off right. I'm trying to say I'm feeling positive about things, that it is moving along, okay? I love what's coming up with this march. We're going to be setting some if it turns out like I hope it will, we're going to be setting some different examples. We're going to be giving some different options to people. I'm not all that concerned about. And here's my little test for you, Dana. I've asked you before. I've said it to Mike. I've said it to everybody else who says we need to this, we need to that. You can prove to me that your way, it's time for your way, if you locally in your area are able to get together a decent-sized organization, even if it's not
right.
public and all that. If you can show me that you can do that there, then I'll believe you about what you're saying to the country right now.
Well, look, I'll be honest, man. In my state, it's taken years to create a list of names and numbers and email contacts.
It's hard, right?
You know, it's not easy. And then once you have that list, to get them to actually come out and meet up at a certain time in a certain place is not easy either. So,
beyond
I mean,
drinking.
It, you know, I mean, yeah, I mean, it's, I mean, you're right. I mean, there are a lot of realistic obstacles that we face, but I mean, if we keep worrying about, you know, everything that's against us and not at least, you know, try to push forward a little bit. I mean, it's never going to – the whole thing is never going to move if people don't start to at least lean in that way. You know, I mean,
right.
That's
Well, check
that's
this out. That's what I find kind of interesting about Jim. Maybe it's because his views are evolving, but he'll say that whenever we do talk about things that we want to do, he'll say, oh, they're so powerful, they're going to crush you, we can't do this, they're going to nuke us, they're going to this. You notice, I don't think it's that. My fear isn't like that. I mean, it's far more difficult for the authorities to just go and bomb a Cobbville. I mean, let's get real here. I mean, there's consequences for that. But
right,
at
exactly.
the same time, he'll also say that their power is an illusion. I'm in the middle there. It's not. It's neither.
Well, all right, Phil. You know what? I'm gonna bring Jim on and let him speak. I'm gonna let him speak for himself. But before he does that, I think the point about the illusion is that all their power is psychological, and you
yeah,
know
I
and
it.
I
it's
know. You know it. You know and I know that. You know, somebody can completely awaken in just a brilliant flash of light, and that's all it takes. And then that individual, you know, that's in the microcosm. That can be manifested in the macrocosm as this thing, you know, spreads out. I mean, and it doesn't take a lot of time for it to happen in the world we live in today with social media and the internet and all this kind of thing. So, I mean, and it's been happening slowly but surely, but more needs to happen. So I'm going to bring Jim on. And let him speak his piece. And I'm gonna mute you, and then I'm gonna bring you on to respond to him, and then we'll probably close the show up. Hey Jim, what's going on?
How you doing, brother?
All right, man. Anything you wanted to jump in on?
Yeah.
We got a lot here tonight.
What I would like to say is that it seems to me it's the main way that the Jews have been able to brainwash us is to put forth this concept of egalitarianism. You know, that everyone's equal, all the races are equal, and it's only the environment that matters. And of course, that was propagated by this Franz Boas, you know, who he wasn't really, I don't think he majored in anthropology, but he was made head of the anthropology department at Columbia University. And his students were Margaret Mead and who was the other one? Anyway, there was a couple of them. Anyway, she wrote this book, Coming of Age in Samoa, you know. She said these Samoans were such nice people. They didn't fight amongst themselves. They were very, promiscuous sexually, and they was totally egalitarian. Now, of course, later they found that it was pure bullshit, you know, that they were not like that at all. But, I mean, Franz Boas and Margaret Mead and Ruth Benedict, they were able to put forth this idea of egalitarianism. And of course,
oh,
American
yeah.
people fought into it. See, that's
well,
the
they
point.
Took
100 years ago.
They, that was
yeah.
the that was the that was the Columbia School of Anthropology. They took over
right.
virtually every school. You had Gene Weltfish, Stephen Jay Gould. There's a number of these guys.
Right.
I mean,
all
Jews, and they put forward the idea that race is a social construct. It's just a myth. Blah blah blah. And you're right, man. But I mean, that's just one of their many agendas. You know, they've got a number of agendas that they threw at us. So.
But that's the key one right there, because if you believe in that all the races are basically biologically equal, then the only problem is the environment. Then if we could correct the environment, then we would be able to equalize. In other words, if we would take a Negro from the ghetto and train him right, he could be a rocket scientist. You know, I mean, this is a big lie of egalitarianism, and we know, of course, that I mean, there's did you get that book I sent you? J. Philip Rushton, Race, Evolution, Behavior, Dana?
Oh, yeah, I got it.
He talks about that. We were talking about testosterone levels. And he says that in there that the the blacks have the highest level of testosterone, the Asians the least, and the whites are intermediate. And I think that's true because it's interesting. You know, I have seen these Asian Indians who are very black, that are just as black, but not blacker than Negro, and yet they don't have the high testosterone level as the Negro. And they're some are very fairly intelligent, and they're not, you know, they're not aggressive like the Negro, although they have a black skin.
That's why I think this happened I think the programming affected the genetics of our people. I really do. I think that's how they did it. And, but how would you respond to the idea that Jewish power is all an illusion? And how would you also respond to the idea of coming out in public and trying to make associations with people out in real life as opposed to on the internet and all this kind of thing, which is what we've been trying to talk about tonight.
Well, yeah, I mean, as far as that, yeah, of course their power is an illusion because it's, and again, I keep on reiterating the fact that they have only the power that we give them. You know, I mean, let's take Franz Boas for instance. I mean, this man had no, I think, training in anthropology. Somehow he got to be the head of the anthropology department, come university, and he was promulgating these ideas that have no basis in reality. They have no basis in fact. And yet, he can somehow convince the people that what he's saying is true. And it's an illusion, and it's something that is not real, and yet people believe it, in spite of all the evidence to the contrary. Okay? That's the main thing about the Jews. They are able somehow to do this. And it was coming from us, or non-Jew, no one would ever believe. They laugh and they say, it's ridiculous. But it's coming from the Jews, they believe it. And what was the other question you said, Dana? How do we get out there and talk to the people about this? Or what was the question?
Well, yeah, I mean, they've got the powers of persuasion, and they have a lot of our own people working with them to help them into these positions, and they've got their own ethnic network and cronyism, nepotism. But, I mean, so that's obvious, but, I mean, I think the illusory factor of it is that it really is all their media. Once people start turning away from the media as a result of the economic crisis that's happening, because fewer and fewer people are going to be caring about entertainment when survival is at stake. So that's why, you know, this crisis is good and it's an opportunity. And as far as, what do you think about just getting out there and trying to put a positive image to counteract, image portrayed by them, the stereotypes that they put about our own people in the movement, and how do we get more people involved? I mean, what do you think?
Well, I think, Dana, I think we have to break the stereotype that we're haters. You know, they say these white nationalists, they just hate. They hate. Well, I mean, I don't hate anybody. You know, the bottom line is I resist the Jews, you know, and I tell the truth about the Jews, you know. But the main thing we have to emphasize is that we, as Aryans, we have made such a positive contribution to the world. I mean, all the scientific inventions, I mean, the invention in medicine and science and technology, they've all been essentially Aryan accomplishments. So we focus on the positive aspects of the Aryan, and then you don't eliminate the negative either, because you see, you know, the Jews have promulgate this idea that the white man is bad and the Negro is good. I mean, look at all this Nelson Mandela, how they're making this idol out of this guy. I mean, you know, if it was a white guy, they wouldn't be all, but they're black, you see. And you look on the television now, they get this television version of all the black guys are the doctors and the lawyers and the white guys are the, I mean, they've totally stood reality upside down. And,
yeah,
and what I do
mean,
is I try to tell people this. Whenever I meet people, I say, you know, I told about the Jews that have done it, because, you know, and
right,
and
exactly. Yeah, I mean,
right.
I think that's what we should be doing. We should just be pointing out it's the Jews stupid. I mean, Roddy even likes to say, you know, it's the culture stupid, and I like that phrase, but I prefer it's the Jews stupid, and you know, I mean, really, we you can't just kind of go right to that. You have to segue a little bit. You have to lay a little groundwork behind it, but eventually we have to wake up to this fact. And unfortunately, a lot of our people are susceptible to the media, to the subliminal messages and the race-mixing agenda that they put in all the movies and the soap operas and all this crap. I mean, geez, on these soap operas now, they literally have like a new race of mixed black out there that you know, the guy, he doesn't look completely black. He you know, he might not have the big nose, you know, the jaw and the, you know, all these features. You know, a lot of them, like, are like, you could tell they're black, but they almost look white. They've got this new race they're pushing for race mixing purposes to make them attractive, you know, to our women. And, you know, I mean, I just think that a lot of us really instinctually are repulsed by this, but unfortunately a lot of them are a lot of regular white folks who have no idea what's going on are susceptible to it, unfortunately. But I'm going to bring Bill on. Let Bill maybe say something, and then let you respond, and then I'm going to close the show out. Bill, okay. Did you want to say anything to Jim?
Just this, we kind of went over all this, but the people that are out there, like I said, highlighting these, you can talk all you want about how wonderful the white race is to the herd animals. And again, what we say over and over again, or I do, not, you're not going to reach most of them, but those that can be reached, it's not going to happen mainly through telling them how wonderful the white race is and how beautiful and all the things that we've invented and all the things we've added to mankind. That can be a part of it, but all they'll do is start saying things like, well, we took the land from the Indians and we colonialized the world. But when you show them the images, you play on fear, you play on hate of these brutal crimes going on right now. Okay, little kid tortured with a blowtorch for hours through the night by a groid. You point those things out right now, and they wonder why that's not in the media. You play on their anger. You play on their fear for their children's future. Those kind of things neutralize the Indians. That's way back. People usually don't care about the past. That's why they don't care about the Hull hoax. So when you play on their fears, their emotions, and get them angry about what's going on right now, that's what's most effective.
All right, Jim.
Yeah, well, I agree with Bill. I think we have to do that. I mean, we have to have both the negative and the positive. People have to see, I like this knockout game that the TV, they don't tell you about that, and it's going on more and more every day, and about, you know, the things with blacks due to whites. And with, yeah, I agree with Bill there, you know, but... but again, we have to balance that out. You know, we have to have the positive image of our race, and of course the fact that the blacks are that way. You know, that's their nature. But again, it doesn't mean I still stay away. It doesn't mean that we have to get the white people up and start hating. You know, at least have to let them realize that it's a genetic thing, it's a biological thing. And essentially, they do it because of their biology. It's just the way they are, and that they should essentially you know, be segregated and isolated. And have their own territory, you know, and that would solve the problem right there. But I certainly agree with Bill that we do have to talk about this, you know, about the negative aspects of blacks.
Yeah.
And again, so
not just blacks,
go ahead.
Yeah, Bill, I think you guys are both right. I think at the end of it, all Jim is saying is that you know, you're not going to get a lot of whites on board if they think it's all about hating other races, because that's what the Jews kind of push as what white nationalism is, and we know that really that's not what it, you know, that's really not
what it's
about at all.
We got Duke for that. In my opinion, I think they're all a bunch. Those are people, like you said, Dana, that the best we can do with them is get them so they're not so hardcore against us. And you can do some of that, or Duke can do that, and Jim can do that. I don't give a shit about those people, because as far as I'm concerned, as Urban Jungle Girl said, they're compost, and I added they're not even good compost because they don't grow good food on that soil. So I'm not interested in those sorry pieces of shit. But I do understand what Jim's saying, and we can have all these different approaches, and I'm fine with it.
Yeah, well, and that's what Holocaust, that's what, like, or historical revisionism is all about, is trying to counteract the image
right.
of National Socialism. Same kind of idea. But, yeah, I think it all kind of fits together. And, you know, is meant to push us all in the right direction at some point. And everybody counts. Any one of these groups or associated people are doing.
Some of them move on to different levels.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
like,
absolutely.
Yeah.
So
they
there's various...
They come in through Jaeger, and then later on they're in, you know, or some of them come in about 9/11 and... whatever it may be, they might advance to different, they may come all the way on board. So I like all these different approaches. I just wish that Carolyn would understand that not everybody has the same passion. I want you to know, Dana, even though I was critical in the chat, I wasn't against you having Weber on or thinking that you should attack him or anything like that. I was just pointing out my opinion. I'm not like her where I think everybody – I do think it's important that the guy who runs the, you know, the institute that's supposed to be revising history to reflect the truth, you know, I think it's rather interesting that he doesn't really give a shit about how many were gassed and all this, but that's just my opinion, and so,
yeah,
you know, I'm
Bill,
not against
– well, I mean, really quickly, the IHR was never meant to be entirely focused on disproving the Holocaust. There was so much more to, and that's what Weber was trying to say, is that you know, it's kind of a misnomer to think that you know, they're throwing out their original intent and purpose. They never meant to you know.
Well, that's what most of the articles I read from the past were about, was World War II and specifically the Holocaust.
But Bill, if you agree that you said yourself that don't you think it's wise to realign your focus and objective if most people today probably don't even care anymore to begin
well,
with?
Well, what I'm getting at is there's different. Yeah. I want different organizations that are focused on different things. That's all fine. But the problem with that I have with him is that's what his organization used to focus on, World War II. And that's what the overwhelming majority of the material I read from them, they did some excellent work, was focused on. And you know, so if you're focused on 911, it doesn't make sense for the guy who's running the 911, let's say group, we care about 911.com, to say that, well, I don't really care about what happened on 911. I'm focused on this. That's all I'm saying. It was just kind of weird to me.
Well, I think their main focus is to, bring Jewish power to light, and
I noticed they didn't write any articles about telling the truth about how this country, you know, like about the Indians, or they didn't get into the Solitarians. They didn't get into anything except for World War II stuff, as far as anything I ever read in the past.
Yeah, well, anyway, that's another debate for another time. I'm going to close the show out. Bill, thanks for playing Devil's Advocate tonight. Appreciate the call. And thanks for Jason. And take care, Jim. I mean, Bill. And thanks to Heathen Hank. We didn't have too much of him tonight, but we got a little taste. And so he'll probably be back next week. Maybe we'll do a whole show with him, or half a show or something. You know, we'll set something up. And, yeah, guys, I appreciate all your input. You know, we've almost gone 3 hours now, so I'm going to close it out. Jim, any closing remarks?
Well, Dana, I think the greatest thing that we have now is the internet. You know, 20 or 30 years ago, people weren't able to get through. I mean, you could have, but it wasn't as easy. And the programs, you know, like with Renegade and these other shows, they're telling the truth, you know, about the Jews and about race. People just can wake up very easily now because they have the internet, you know, and it's so easy to get on it and learn the truth. And it wasn't that way years ago, you know. So that's why I feel very positive about the future, because, you know, we have people like you and people like Kyle and people like Mike and people like Siegfried who are telling the truth, you know, and getting this out there to people. And I think more and more people are going to be listening to Renegade. You know, they're going to be listening to the truth, because like you see, with the way the economy is and everything, and the bomb and all that stuff, people are reaching out. They're seeking. I know they're dissatisfied now. And we have the truth. We have the truth that these people need, you see. And so basically, that's all I have to say. But I want to thank you, Dana, for everything that you're doing, and keep it a good work, buddy.
All right, Jim, right back to you. Volker, I don't know if you're still on the line. Flashes of brilliance before we go out?
Yes. Avoid bread and circuses, and on the individual scale, seek to gain back some kind of a spiritual fullness. Most of us are looking for that also, I think.
Absolutely, man. And you'll find it once you meet up with the right people. That's why I say do what you have to do to find these people, because they are out there. And
I'm halfway there.
What's that?
I'm halfway there.
All right, brother. So we're gonna go out with that, and we'll be back again. Please listen to all the shows on RenegadeBroadcasting.com. We've got a lot of great hosts here. And, you know, just a lot of material to go through. So, you know, just check out all the sites Kyle put up on the side of the website. And, you know, get pumped up for the White Man March. This is our time. Let's do it. All right, I'm going out. Take care, guys. This is Electric Hellfire Club. Take care.
right, guys, show's going to cut out any second now, but I did find a quote that I copied. Jason put it in the chat the other day, and it's from Greg Johnson. I just want to read it because it pertains to what we were talking about. You only have one death, thus even people who would glory in heroic martyrdom have to choose their battles wisely and make their deaths count. Yes, you have to pace yourself. Yes, you have to save yourself. Yes, you can't live as if every day were your last. But these truisms easily serve as rationalizations for cowardice, because at a certain point, you have to ask what you are saving yourself for. You can't take it with you, and ultimately, accomplishments do not come from saving ourselves, but from spending ourselves. What we do not give will be taken by death in the end. Yet the whole bourgeoisie dream is premised on evading this simple, grim reality. Bourgeoisie man seeks eternal springtime and perpetual peace, a happily ever after on sunlit pudding greens, free of tragic choices and tragic grandeur, free of ideals that can pierce his heart and shed his blood. But you can't do battle with Spawn while playing it safe. You can't overthrow a system you are invested in. You can't challenge the rulers of this world and count on reaching retirement age. In the face of world-annihilating evil, we can no longer afford to be such men. And I think that about says it for tonight. So I'm out, and we'll see you guys again on another edition of Imperium Europa. Please listen to all the shows on Renegade Broadcasting. Hail Victory.